Could you whittle your life down to a few square metres and a handful of possessions? Many people do and are. It's all part of the so-called tiny house movement. But it was actually something very big that prompted Dee Williams to go very small, to tiny size her life, as it's described. And she's written about this in a beautiful book, The Big Tiny, a built-it-myself memoir. In it she writes, "It looks like a mobile gingerbread house or a cuckoo clock on wheels. I don't mind the comparisons. I like gingerbread." Dee moved from a three-bedroom house in Portland in the US to a minute house that fits on a trailer base, parks in her friend's backyard, and in the years since, she's founded the Portland Alternative Dwellings Group, or PAD, and she joins us on the line this morning. Welcome, Dee.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
What a beautiful book this is. It really is. And we'll get to how tiny your house is. But can you tell us, what did owning a home mean for you, represent for you before you did this?
Oh, well, I had a big three-bedroom bungalow, kind of your standard U.S. home. And, you know, it was my nest egg. It was my investment in the future. So I had a 30-year mortgage, and I figured I could pay that down by the time I was 60 and ready to retire and, you know, then could live mortgage-free until I bit the bullet another 20 years later.
Oh, you make it sound so much fun.
I loved my house. I did love my house. It was a beautiful house, and it made me feel like I was, you know, kind of pursuing the American dream. Homeowner, kind of in charge of my own castle, and, yeah, I had a beautiful, beautiful gardens in the front and the back. So, you know, I felt like I was taking a good swing at life by owning that house.
Yeah, and you were taking a good swing at life. This was a big DIY project. You were young. You had the energy. You were in your mid-30s. You had housemates in to help pay your mortgage. So it struck me that life was pretty good for you. But then your body hijacked you rather dramatically, didn't it? Can you describe what happened for you?
Yeah, I'm an outdoor person, and I'm a runner, a climber, very athletic person. And one morning I woke up in an ICU room in the hospital, and I had had a heart attack, and shortly after that was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. So it's like going into the hospital, I was one thing, and waking up in the hospital a few days after I'd fainted at the grocery store, I was all of a sudden this, you know, cardiac care person, and it was quite a shock.
You were only 40.
Yeah, and, you know, again, you know, I really felt like I was kind of in, you know, great shape. I was in my body. I was a vegetarian, you know. I took good care of my body. So, you know, ending up with a heart problem was really out of the blue for me.
How did it start to eat away at your vision of yourself and your future? Because what was going on in your head was very interesting to me.
Oh, you know, I remember coming home from the hospital and sitting in my living room, my beautiful living room, and looking around and just feeling like I couldn't. On the one hand, I loved everything was so beautiful. You know, the way the sun was filtering through the room, the smell of my house, the way it felt to be at home finally after being in the hospital for a while. You know, all of these feelings of just being completely enraptured by the little things in life. And juxtaposed to that was the sense that I couldn't relate to almost anything in my life. Getting up and going to work and having this 30-year mortgage and all of this debt when, you know, the thing I really wanted to do was just sit back and relax and enjoy, you know, my friends and family and how beautiful everything was.
Feeling life very intensely, but wondering,
yeah.
But wondering what life was to become.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of a sudden I felt like I was straddling with one foot in the present moment and deeply in the present moment, and then the other foot, like most of us do. is kind of reaching for the future, you know, working hard in order to, you know, make money, in order to, you know, get to the weekend and enjoy our weekend holiday, you know, instead of actually just living, you know, this moment by moment where, you know, that's where real life is, right, in the moment.
Mm. And you could have taken yourself on a big holiday. You mentioned the little things in life. So what was it around that time, as you were grappling with this rather mysterious heart condition, what was it that made you think, well, I think I might build a cubby house for adults?
I was
the ultimate fantasy.
I was sitting in the doctor's office, and I read an article about a guy named Jay Schaefer who had built a little tiny house on wheels, and there was something about that image. It was a little pointy roof above a cedar-clad cabin. It looked like a vacation rental. You know, it looked like the clubhouse that I always wanted as a kid, or a tree house, you know. And all of a sudden it was like, you know, it seemed to make sense in the way that everything would somehow be manageable and simple. I could take a bite out of life the way that I wanted, because, you know, I wouldn't have a mortgage. I wouldn't have a debt, and, you know, I'd have more time to explore the life that I really wanted.
It
all of a sudden seemed to make sense.
And it made so much sense. You booked a plane flight and headed off to meet Jay Schaefer. He is Mr. Tiny House Man. It could be argued that you've become Miss Tiny House Woman in terms of your guru status in the tiny house movement now. But what had he come up with that made you think, right, I can do this?
Well, you know, the thing that struck me is that he's a normal guy. He's not like a big, burly, carpenter-like guy. He's a designer, an artist. And so I kind of thought, well, if a non-carpenter could build such a beautiful house, then maybe I could build a beautiful house. And it was small. It's only 84 square feet, you know, so that's, in the U.S., that's smaller than a parking spot. So it's like, you know, how far amiss can you go on something so small, you know? So, and more than that, you know, he seemed truly happy when I did have a chance to meet him. He had been living in his house for a couple of years, and he seemed truly happy with his choices. I was curious about whether or not I was going to meet a kook. I was going to walk up to his little house, and he was going to present himself a little bit like a Keebler elf and perhaps a little neurotic, but he was a really average, normal, very cool guy.
So you started to plan, and this was a design feat. It's a carpentry feat, a building feat, an engineering feat. You took all that on yourself. Describe the space that you created.
Well, it's, again, you know, it's a little pointy roof. It looks like a little vacation cabin that you'd see in some sort of like a Norman Rockwell painting. Mm. And so as you walk up to the house, as you walk across the lawn, you know, it's got that triangle on top of a square look, which for me was like the quintessential drawing when I was a kid of what home was supposed to be. You know, this little triangle with a square with a curly cute tree off to the side. You take a couple steps up to the front door. You open the front door, and my kitchen is on the left, and it's just a galley, you know, sink with a one burner stove. My bathroom is on the right, and above you is the sleeping loft. You take a couple of steps from there, and you're out from under the sleeping loft. And all of a sudden, you're in what I call the great room, which
I love that.
Is about a,
it's about the size of a rug, a small rug, or a kitchen table.
Yeah, it's about the size of a kitchen table. That's a good comparison. Mm. But it feels much bigger because the ceiling is about 11 feet above your head, or from the floor up, and then there's a skylight too. So you've got this great expanse visually. So it plays a little game with your mind in really helping you feel a sense of spaciousness. And then also on top of that, you know, it's all of this beautiful salvaged knotty pine wood. So it's got this really warm kind of amber glow to it. that really just helps calm you. There's some psychology involved in the materials and how your brain works inside this small space.
And collecting those materials was something you did very mindfully. What haven't you been able to fit in there? Can you, I mean, in those 84 square feet, are you telling me you've got a shower, a toilet, a kitchen, a bed? What hasn't made it inside?
Well, I don't have running water, so I don't have a shower, unless you count, you know, me washing in a basin, the shower, which I sometimes pretend it is, but I'm fooling myself.
Yeah.
So I don't have running water. I shower at work, or I shower at the neighbor's house, or I shower at the gym, and I don't have a refrigerator. I use a cooler. I buy perishables in small quantity often. And what else? I don't have a lap pool. I don't have a billiard table. I probably couldn't fit a keg of beer in through the front door. There's lots that's not in there.
But in fact, it seems that your personal world grew in ways that are almost immeasurable. And we should just say that you parked this out the back of your dear friends Hugh and Annie's place. So in some sense, you're kind of part and local to a community of loved ones.
Yeah, you know, it was important to me. I didn't know what my health was going to be like. I didn't know when it was going to take a turn. And so for me to be set up somewhere that I could have friends to come check on me when I was not feeling well, people that I felt like I was living my day-to-day with. And, you know, as a single woman who was 40 at the time, you know, all of a sudden I was confronted with a serious illness, and I didn't want to move back home with my parents. And I didn't want to move in with my friends and find myself sleeping on one of those hospital beds in their living room. So, you know, the idea of having my own space that could accommodate my health for as long as I had it made sense. And Hugh and Annie were really gracious in inviting me to give it a go. And we took it on as an experiment, and it worked. It's continued to work, you know, for the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And you also shared the house for many years with your dear dog, Rudy. And Rudy's story made me weep, I must say. But what I also was really moved by was your description, Dee Williams, of what it connects you to. I like what it connects me to. And it's not just people, but take us inside that space and how you think it connects you to the world around you, to nature's antics, as you describe it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a skylight over my bed, and so I get invited outside in the in-between times. You know, like when you wake up in the middle of the night and you roll over and you open your eyes, and all of a sudden you can see the moon poking through a sphincter of black clouds. It just looks like, I think in The Big Tiny I describe it as, it looks like a colonoscopy brochure. You know, it's like this hilarious, funny moment of like, oh my gosh, nature's so funny. Or listening to the rain on the roof. I have a metal roof, so I get to, you know, I think in Washington where I live, it rains about 1,000 different ways in a single night. So at one point it might sound like rock salt, and in the next minute it's going to sound like my house is being, you know, dragged through a car wash. You know, it's got all of this dynamic to it, and even though I've done plenty of camping, I don't think I realize that every night nature has something going on, whether it's, you know, raccoons and porcupines that we have in Washington that waddle down the alley behind my house and I can hear them, or it's the rain, or just rolling over and seeing what the clouds are doing. It's actually quite beautiful. And it's really encouraged me to see my natural community in a different way.
Well, I was struck also by the sacrifices you made and the giving up of the books, you writing, giving up your books, and it took you actually months to really downsize so you could almost live with just a few items, although I think at last count it might have been 305 items, but I suspect you're counting every little, you know, I don't know, nail clipping in that. But you talk about being happy enough.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, I've gotten pretty clever about doing these little tricks. So as an example, I only own 6 or 7 books proper, but I've come to see our public library is my bookshelf. You know, it's those are my books. So I don't keep them in my house, but they're public library books. So it's all of a sudden I've got all kinds of books at my disposal. And it's the same with, you know, thinking about the local food co-op. You know, I don't have much of a pantry or a refrigerator, but, you know, my local food co-op has become my pantry and my refrigerator. I just have to schedule the right moment to go there, you know. And all of that ultimately has helped me see that I've got plenty. I've got everything I need, and I'm not really wanting. And when I do find myself kvetching because I don't have a shower, for example, you know, that's a part of life. You know, there's a certain myth that we should be 100% happy all the time. And in fact, if we really believe that's true, that we should be happy all the time, we're going to be pretty miserable, at least some part of the time, because life isn't meant to be perfectly comfortable. You know, a good solid B average is what I say, 85% happy. That's a pretty good mark in life.
Well, it is a pretty good mark. Now you actually lecture across the country. You've taught building workshops through your company, Portland Alternative Dwellings. You've turned this into your life. And just finally and briefly, do you see tiny houses growing in interest? Because there's also a pushback. People want big houses and big yards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with wanting something big and having a great yard and all of that stuff. As long as you're sharing it, as long as you're connecting to your community in a way and to your natural environment in a way that, you know, gives you a chance to see that you belong to something broader than just your nuclear family or your spouse or your kids, you know. So as far as the small house movement, I've definitely seen a lot more people interested in building their own house and having it fit them and having it be something that, yes, that they can take forward into the future.
Look, it's a wonderful story. Thank you for putting it all down in the big tiny, a built it myself memoir. Dee Williams, thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk to the folks in Australia.